Before the show starts, make sure you visit the Breakfast Store for all the sweet breakfast merch, like the super comfy breakfast t-shirts and the very dapper breakfast coffee mugs. Go there now, breakfaststore.com.
People of Earth, if you can hear my voice, you have arrived at another episode of Breakfast with Brent Pope. I'm your host, Brent Pope. Earthlings, this is not just any breakfast. This is the season 3 finale. 3 years, everybody. So, you know, I had to bring the thunder with my guest for the season 3 finale. And I did. This dude is making his second appearance on Breakfast. First appearance was in Breakfast number 2. Can you believe that? Wow. This is number 83.
Wow.
Yeah. My guest today is writer, actor, talented at everything, Zora Beacon-Gaga. You know his work from popular projects like Ghosts, I Love That For You, The First Lady, and Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, and it goes on and on. And that's not all, guys. We had breakfast from a spot that I thought deserved a repeat visit, Fonuts in Studio City. So we're going to be talking about some vegan donuts. So let's go. The end of season 3. We have Zora Beacon-Gaga today on Breakfast.
Welcome to Breakfast with Brent Pope.
Breakfast.
This young lady just smashed the lids on all these cakes in the bakery section.
I could go on a Hallmark card.
My guest today.
Oh, I'm going to need to hear all about that.
I didn't need any extra sausage.
He adds character to my crew.
Is a goat pit a real thing?
Breakfast.
What?
Welcome to Breakfast with Brent Pope.
Great place to hang out and good food, too. I'm always playing blue-collar guys.
Breakfast.
Let me screw through the pipe.
I wouldn't jump up and down until we stabilized the hydraulics.
I love a cruller. All my uncles got the gout. Jalapeno / cheddar waffles.
Who doesn't love that? It's breakfast time.
Breakfast.
The only show where bacon, pancakes, Hollywood. I'm your host, Brent Pope.
Zora Beacon-Gaga, welcome to the tiny studio LA in NoHo.
Wow, I didn't realize I was number 2. I'm like, am I like a founding father?
You're a founding father. If, okay. If there was a Mount Rush, if there was a Mount Breakfast,
sure.
More.
Yeah, Breakfast more.
It would be you, Mary Kennedy, I believe Tommy Bechtold, and I guess me, you know, I have
of course,
the fourth
of course.
One.
Yeah, you'd have to be there, yeah.
I call FDR with the glasses. Is he on there?
I don't know. No, there's another Roosevelt. It's Teddy.
Typical. Oh, yeah, Teddy Roosevelt. That's right. Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
He's with the glasses, though, right?
He has glasses and a mustache.
And the mustache. Yeah. I call the stash and the glasses. I don't know which one you call. But.
Yeah. Maybe, well, I mean, they all own slaves, so.
Well,
you
maybe none of them. Maybe replace all of them with us.
Yeah, yeah. That's it's our own Mount Rushmore. Yeah, yeah. Listen, we're taking it back.
The weird thing is, I always hear that it's smaller than you think it is. I mean,
sure.
And it's also in South Dakota, which, I mean, there's not a lot of stuff in South Dakota.
I really have always wanted to go there, but I know that it's one of those places that is going to be just
underwhelming.
Small. Yeah, it's going to be underwhelming, but yeah. I want to go. And also, was it Cary Grant that was running on top of Mount Rushmore in North by Northwest?
North by Northwest. I believe that's Cary Grant.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was there running on top of that shit.
I mean, credited as being the first action pick of all time, North by Northwest, I believe.
Hitchcock. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Did they really shoot out there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think because
I feel like back then it's like they you didn't need a permit to shoot at.
Well,
like
that's interesting that you say that because, you know, if you go on that like Universal Studios tour, they used to do a thing like they had a Hitchcock studio where they would have you look like you were hanging from the thing.
Sure,
so I don't know
sure.
if that was the same thing they did in the movie or if that's just something they did for.
It'd be crazy if they were actually running on top of. Mount
Rushmore. Pretty dangerous, too, I would think at that time because you would have to see they would have to have like.
Right.
Well, the rigging that you're holding—that's holding you up—and I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
those
that's a good
big
question.
Cameras that they had back then, but who knows? Somebody's probably googling it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Actually,
it was all practical effects.
Yeah, it was practical. Oh, okay. Yeah, went out to South Dakota.
Well, Zora, you and I have known each other for a long time. We've done sketch comedy together. We've done internet videos. Mm-hmm. I did your old podcast where you guys would freestyle. Do hip hop rap to like stories that people would tell. What was that one called?
Dope Town 3000. Yeah,
you know,
still available out there. Yeah, look, Apple Podcasts.
You haven't done a new one in a while, but like I still love those shows. I mean, I would listen to all of them. It's almost like drunk history, right?
Sure.
Except the rappers are not drunk when they're recreating the story that the person tells.
Yeah, yeah. Although there was a episode where we did. We were pretty high.
Yeah, you did a high episode?
Yeah.
A weed episode? Is that what you called it?
Well, it was, our group, Dope Town 3000, we were guests on this podcast called Too Effing High. And we immediately recorded a podcast right after that.
Like, wait, who's the host of that? I'm thinking in my head who I think it's
James Mastriani.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a show at UCB
okay, gotcha.
that sort of turned into a podcast.
Gotcha.
But anyway, we ended up recording an episode of ours like right after that. And it was just, we were all super high. And I can't remember which one, but you could probably tell because it was bananas.
Right. All right. Well, you know, Dopetown 3000 podcast.
There you go.
Check that out, guys. You want a recommendation 50, from me?
50 episodes from...
Oh, 50 episodes.
Yeah,
wow.
2018.
That's cute. 50.
Yeah. oh, that's cute. Aww.
That's cute. I love that for you. Yeah. no, that's a lot, man. That's a lot more than most podcasts. Like a lot of the ones you'll see, they have like 6, 8, then they're done.
I mean, listen, a lot of people are you know, saying that it's, you know, kind of like a classic show that was ill-fated and, you know, died too soon. Kind of like
interesting. Yeah.
Freaks and Geeks. A lot of people are talking about like it's the Freaks and Geeks of podcasts.
Can you think of a better show that didn't get a second season than Freaks and Geeks?
No.
Or one that had more giant stars come out of it than Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah. I mean, it's storied at this point, yeah. Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
Really, maybe it was like the motivation that those guys needed to just take over comedy 8 years later.
And maybe if that show had gone on 5, 6 seasons, that some of them wouldn't have done some of the stuff they did.
Yeah, for sure. Truly.
One of those things we talk about a lot is, I guess people tend to be in the place where you're supposed to be. And, you know, we spend a lot of times regretting things that didn't happen or breaks we didn't get. And maybe the breaks we didn't get were breaks in a positive way for something else.
Sure.
I know it sounds very woo-woo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're getting so woo-woo
and not
right
like
now.
Not like Brent at all. Actually, you know, I'm pretty bottom line. You know me.
Oh, so people don't know the woo-woo side of Brent Pope.
Is there a way? Am I super woo-woo?
I don't know,
tell
man.
Me. Tell me.
Somewhere in there.
All right. Well, apparently I am sometimes now. I mean, yeah. Look, we all evolve, not necessarily for the better.
Sure. Some regress.
Yeah. I mean, you regress.
But yeah, I agree with that. I agree with those things happening. And look, I have a very clear woo-woo side. I truly believe in, you know, things being for you and not for you. Yeah.
You're working on so many things like kind of right now. Let's talk about Ghosts.
Okay.
Great show. Now, there's a British version of Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
There's an American version, which I've seen that. It's great. Have you seen both versions? Are they very similar or?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely watched both versions. I watched the American version first because I'm working on season 2.
Yes.
And I wasn't on season 1, so I can't take any credit for the success of season 1. But I did watch it because I know the creators from, we worked together on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Okay.
And so, you know, I just remember them, you know, having to leave the room because they went to shoot the pilot. And then the pilot, you know, got ordered a series and we're kind of like, yeah, you know, go Joes. And it became this huge success. And so watched that first and I was like, oh, this is amazing. But I knew it was going to be amazing because those guys are so funny and so clever. And then when I became available to staff on it, I sort of caught up with the English version, which I didn't know about. And I didn't know that it ran concurrent. I knew that it was an adaptation, but I didn't know that it was like a current.
So it's still running, the British version?
It's still running. In fact, we've done, at this point, we're going to outpace them because they do 6 episodes a season. So they have 3 seasons, but out in the world at this point, I think they have 18 episodes, including, I think, a couple of Christmas specials. So we're going to outpace them pretty soon. But anyway, I watched all through it, and it is very different in a way, like where, you know, there are certain episodes that are based
on
the British version, but it's just different because it's based on history. It's based on history of that particular area.
Right.
So their ghosts are, you know, they have a caveman. They have a guy like a parliamentarian, like a prime minister. They have, you know, just sort of like British specific ghosts.
Okay.
Whereas for us, like the Joes, Joe Port and Joe Wiseman, really just kind of dug into American history and made sure that, you know, we had, you know, an indigenous character. We have a Viking because Vikings sort of landed on the shores here and, you know, like a Harlem Renaissance jazz singer and a founding father type character.
Okay.
So just stuff like that.
Now, if you guys at home or wherever you're listening haven't seen either version of Ghosts, I mean, I would say basically the premise is people move into a house. There's a bunch of ghosts living there and they won't move out. And so how are you going to coexist, basically, right?
Basically, a married couple, the woman inherits this house from a relative that passed away, and there are ghosts in this house, and she hits her head and has a concussion and goes into a coma, and then when she wakes up, she's the only one who can see these ghosts and interact with them. And so it's a show where it's like a family show, but where most of the characters are only seen by one person.
Reminds me a little bit, you know, like little Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And now this is probably, it's before my time, so I know it's before your time. There was a show that used to be on, that I used to see on reruns called Topper, which was a very dapper guy, like in a top hat. I think his wife are killed in a car crash and then still go back to live in their mansion when new people move in. You know, it's that type of deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they have one of those St. Bernard dogs or something. Okay. Anyway,
okay.
It's every story that I've seen like that is, it's just a great, I think it works. And on Ghosts in particular, the characters are so, you're right, I love that they're so specific to the United States.
Yeah.
And there's no way, no matter how big the characters are, they can't be made. They're just like, I buy it because they're ghosts.
Yeah. And also, like, what I think the show does well and definitely did well in the first season is really ground them in kind of, yeah, they're ghosts, but you sort of get to know their backstory and like what their lives were like. And you kind of see them grow in the afterlife where, you know, one of the characters is this founding father, you know, character, or at least, you know, kind of a forgotten founding father,
yes,
revolutionary general. And, you know, he was closeted his entire life and closeted throughout, right, you know, his afterlife. And you sort of see him come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this way of kind of really grounding them and following them and seeing them grow as human beings. And it, to me, like, I think that's what makes the show really special, because you realize, yeah, like, these, it's our connection to history. It's like our, like, yeah, there's this connection that we have to our ancestors and the people that were here before us that we could sort of, like, feel and experience. And that's what I really dig about the show.
Nice. Well, congrats. I'm glad you're working on that. I've already seen the American version. I kind of want to see the British one, too, just to see how it's different, you know, and the different characters they have. And
yeah, you know, they really do their own version in, like, even their own tone.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that created it, they have, like, I think, like, six created by people that are actually from this group called, this collective called Horrible Histories.
Oh, interesting.
These people who would, it was a show that I used to play for my students, actually, when I was an ancient history teacher, sixth grade. And it's crazy that I used to play these videos of, like, they would do these really funny shorts about the Roman Empire and, you know, about just, like, English history. But I used a lot of the Roman Empire videos, but they were so funny and so educational. And it's just funny that this group of people ended up making this show that I'm sort of working on the American adaptation of.
Cool.
So highly recommend both.
Yeah. Well, look, you also mentioned Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. Speaking of a show that, like, I thought deserved longer.
Sure.
And I thought was original. You worked on that show as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you had worked on the episode that everyone was talking about.
Yeah. Are you talking about Zoe's Extraordinary Reckoning?
Yes.
Yeah.
What I got from that, and I know this is a thing, if people are compromised, it's not their job to explain to you how they're compromised or to tell their stories for all of the people that are in that situation, right?
Sure, sure.
I mean, that's the big lesson. Not that I didn't know that before, but it's always good to be reminded of it.
Yeah.
What did you think about that episode in particular?
First of all, it came out really beautifully, and I'm very proud of the end product. I mean,
yes,
it was very, very challenging. When we were breaking episodes in early days in the writer's room, it was, you know, the summer of 2020, you know, we were in the midst of so many incredible earth-shattering moments.
Yeah.
In addition to the pandemic, we were, you know, experiencing this racial reckoning where companies and, you know, organizations and everyone is sort of like really reflecting on themselves and it really spanned out to people's relationships, like personal relationships. And so, you know, I thought in the room, you know, a show about a white woman learning to be more empathetic through hearing musical numbers, it was just sort of like a no-brainer that this was a lesson that she was going to learn eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And her having two black friends who she was sort of getting to know in this moment, it just seemed like sort of telling the truth. And yeah, we really took it on, and you know, all the musical numbers in the show or in that episode were all by black artists, and we really wanted to be intentional about it, you know, but it was challenging. I mean, it was frightening because I think it's not easy, but I think having distance and telling a story like that about the past is a bit more removed, where it's about like the civil rights era or, you know, like the 1800s but this was very much about like modern times, like what racial tension and reckoning, how that happens and how it plays out today.
Yeah.
And so it was really challenging. People were scared.
Yeah.
Including myself. Like, we all wanted to do it justice. And I think because everyone cared about it so much and we really listened to a lot of feedback from the actors and, you know, John Clarence Stewart, who was the anchor of that entire episode. And it was all told.
I mean, he's always great. Brilliant in that episode.
He was absolutely brilliant. And he's such an incredible actor. And he was able to really show what an incredible, just the incredible chops that he has. And so, and everyone brought it. I mean, Jane Levy was incredible too. And Kapil Talwalkar, who played Tobin, was incredible. I mean, everyone just crushed it. Alex Newell, everyone just brought it and couldn't be more proud.
I thought it was one of the most impactful episodes of any television show that came out during 2020.
Yeah.
And that's borne out by like how many articles were written about it and how many people were talking about it. I don't know how you feel about this, but I think as a writer, I mean, I think that's the biggest compliment you can have is to have people, you help to write something and people talk about it and discuss it. You made words, it's produced into a show, and then other people have so many more words about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
In a constructive and mostly positive manner, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is that you don't know what the end product is going to be. And so that's the scary part, right?
Yeah,
like we knew that, okay, if we do this well, it could have this impact, you know, or, you know, if we do it in a way where, you know, something doesn't translate, it could be dragged on Black Twitter. Like that has always been, you know, a deep fear of mine and I'll get to that later. But yeah, you know, we were sort of kind of scared at that aspect. But what I learned is to not operate in fear and to really go after telling the truth and really listening to your gut and your instinct and collaborating and having that creative tension and listening to perspective. And, you know, there were just like so many conversations that we had with like Austin Winsberg, who was the creator and showrunner, white man. You know, we had a lot of honest conversations in real time in the room, you know, like, well, this is what happens when, you know, my friends reach out to me and want me to explain racism to them. And he would be like, well, yeah, you know, I would talk to my friend about it and, you know, she would get frustrated. And so, you know, just having that open dialogue with Austin and Austin creating that space for us to tell that story was just such a huge part of it. And you know, all the people in the room and then getting to set, I was up there, you know, for 2 months during 2020 and just being able to collaborate with Anya Adams, who directed the episode and having her perspective as like a mixed race person. And yeah, just it was so collaborative.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, like, but to what you're saying, you don't know what the impact is going to be. And it's so rewarding. And just to hear that people were, it really resonated with people. It's why we do what we do.
Right.
As corny as that sounds, truly, it really is. And it's a reminder of like when I'm in the thick of it of like, God, this is so difficult. This is so scary of like, no, we're doing this so people can really be impacted by it.
I love that show, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. That particular episode was just like above and beyond, just a different kind of thing, actually. You know what I mean? It had another level to it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Thank you.
So yeah, congrats on that. Before we go too much further, though, we did have some donuts from a place called Fonuts in Studio City, where we had some vegan donuts. What did you think about those vegan donuts?
I thought they were really good. I love donuts. I am severely lactose intolerant, and so I enjoy donuts when I can have them.
Mm-hmm.
I like them. They're very good. I enjoyed the vanilla bean coffee ones probably the most.
Okay, so let's go over this. We had a vanilla bean coffee, and it tasted like kind of like coffee, like a coffee donut? Kind
with cream.
With cream, coffee with cream, yeah. It's almost like I was saying when we were eating them, like, oh, I could just drink this with water, and it kind of still feels like I'm drinking coffee with a donut.
Yeah, yeah, like it definitely tasted like that, or just drinking like a coffee with like vanilla creamer or something like that.
Yeah.
That's sort of like the vibe that I was getting.
And by the way, and I'll put these pictures up on social media and different places, my website. Beautiful looking donuts. I mean, the presentation is just like second to none.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that my favorite is probably the lemon.
Okay.
You know, when you get that real tart lemon flavor where it's like, you know, the guy, oh, what's his name, on the British Bake Off says it just like you can feel it in your cheek right here. That's like something that I really, really love. Do you like the lemon one?
I like the lemon one. I think my second favorite was probably a tie between the peanut butter chocolate,
mm-hmm.
or just the straight up vanilla. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, the vanilla was really good. That was part of the, we had the black and white. So half of it was chocolate and half of it was vanilla.
Yeah.
Both executed really well. I do really love that peanut butter chocolate too.
It was very good.
And, you know, I do like the little touch they put on. There's like the peanut butter chocolate one. They do put like a little half of a peanut on top of it in the icing. The vanilla bean one, they put like a little coffee bean on top.
Yeah, I appreciate the details.
I don't know if you tried the banana chocolate one. It was very decadent. You know, delicious, but man, it was decadent. And it was definitely banana and chocolate. Something about the banana adds, depth to it.
Sure. Yeah. Richness.
Yeah, the richness. There you go. That's the word. The richness. You're the writer. I'm the buffoon.
I'm here to collaborate. You know, all I'm in, like, I'm just in a room pitching shit. That's all I'm doing.
That's right.
But I did not have the chocolate banana.
Yeah.
Because I like chocolate and I like banana flavored stuff and also bananas.
Yeah.
Banana bread. Don't like them together. Yeah.
You know what's funny? I'm kind of in the same boat. I tried it just because I was like, oh, we got it. I'm going to try it.
Mm-hmm.
It was still good. Not the one that I would order,
but
it's still good. If you like banana and chocolate, you're into it.
It would be for you, but not for me.
That's right. It would be faux you, like in faux nuts.
Because it's faux nuts.
Faux nuts.
Yeah. It's good.
Well, thank you for enjoying the faux nuts with me. I had it one other time. And when we were talking, we kind of had a scheduling thing where we didn't want to for like when you were working in acting, writing and all this stuff. Now, sometimes you have to kind of lock yourself down because if you happen to get COVID while you're working on a show, you're just done. You know what I mean? And so we're in that situation right now where we're trying to kind of stay safe. So I was like, well, how about if I just go pick up donuts and bring them to the studio and then we're not around a bunch of people and we'll be less of a chance of, you know, us having an accident or something. So yeah, but thank you for enjoying those with me. I really enjoyed them. And first of all, they're always baked at Faux Nuts. So it's not like the ones that are fried, which I enjoy those as well. But these, if you put them next to other baked donuts, you would not be able to tell that they're vegan.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I enjoy cake donuts more than other donuts. If I'm given the choice, I'll pick the cake.
Interesting. I'm probably about 50-50. I do enjoy how the cake donut, if you have some kind of milk or coffee, it really soaks it up. You know what I mean? It can take on a good amount of the liquid to soak it up.
Love that.
I do that. I do love the airiness of the, you know, the fried donuts too. So, which is, recent breakfast we had beignets, which is, that's what you're talking about there is the airiness, right?
Yeah, beignets. So.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Well, Zora, you were also working on a show that I was digging into called The First Lady.
Mm-hmm.
What do you take away from that show?
I mean, it was a really challenging experience. It was such an honor, to really portray these incredible women from history, particularly Michelle Obama, which I worked on the Michelle Obama storyline. It was approached like three biopics.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I was hired on, you know, I was hired on after they had like a writer's room and they kind of like unraveled all the scripts and, you know, they kind of shot them as three movies, back to back. Yeah, it was incredible. It was scary and I'm proud of how it came out. I mean, the reviews were mixed. I think people like really felt a type of way about, you know, the betrayal of Michelle Obama. I think Michelle is such a beloved person worldwide.
Yeah.
And so we all have like our own precious understanding of her.
Yeah.
And I thought Viola Davis crushed it. There were talk about Black Twitter. I mean, the first episode, you know, the day of the premiere, I mean, this scene from the first episode was trending on Black Twitter.
Yeah. In a bad way?
Yeah. You know, it was a scene where, you know, Michelle and Barack are having this really intense argument about this moment when Barack is running for president and it's becoming very scary. And, you know, he is a black man, and it just was different for him. Right. And the threats of violence were coming down, obviously, a lot harder on him and his family. Anyway, we really, you know, wanted to portray that conversation of, like, Michelle not being okay with it, because she was not into Barack running for president. Like, she'd never wanted to be in politics.
Interesting.
And so we wanted to really be truthful about that. And so this particular scene, they're having, like, a conversation of, like, this is how this couple talks behind closed doors. Just a moment of the conversation where there was some, like, you know, some pretty spicy language of a black couple talking behind closed doors that, you know, was taken out of context. And you know, black Twitter just doing what black Twitter does. You know, people were making jokes. People were making jokes about, you know, just her appearance and her makeup. And, you know, it really got lost in translation. And I think a lot of people didn't realize that it was, like, a series on Showtime. People thought it was a, you know, TV movie. And it was, like, all the things that I was, like, sort of scared of in terms of, like, having something trend on black Twitter. But also I realized that, you know, there are just a lot of people on black Twitter that just on Twitter in general that just want to hate on something.
Of course. Yeah. You know? And that's just what it is.
That's just what it is. Yeah. And so people were just saying the most ignorant things. And part of me was like, this is so disrespectful. Like, the fact that we're talking about a black woman's lips right now,
yeah,
like, on Twitter is just so insane to me.
Well,
and I don't think that's going to age well.
No.
But it was also this thing of, like, me realizing that this thing that I was always scared of, having something trend on black Twitter, it's fine.
Yeah, it's...
It's like, it's okay.
It's. I'm glad that you, not that you had to go through it, but you went through it to realize.
Yeah, it was
everything's,
like,
gonna be okay.
Exactly, it was, like, so scary to me, and it happened. I was like, oh, this is just a bunch of ridiculous people on Twitter.
Well, and the things that I saw were just like, okay, first of all, Viola Davis is one of the greatest living actors in the world.
In the world.
So we're not gonna put her in, like, prosthetics to make her look like Michelle Obama. That's ridiculous.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
She's portraying, obviously, a beloved person that's still very much around. So, yes, the comparisons, I guess, are going to be there in your head. But you also have to be like, this is an actor playing this character.
Yeah.
And they're not going to look exactly alike.
Yeah, they are. And it is, like, it brought that inherent challenge of, you know, with Betty Ford. A lot of people don't know much about Betty Ford. And she has, like, this incredible story about, mm-hmm. you know, addiction and rehab and you know, being first lady in, like, right after Richard Nixon. And so, yeah, there's, like, sort of a separation there. And then with Eleanor Roosevelt, obviously, you know, that was a long time ago and she's iconic. But still, there's, like, that separation of time where we didn't live as with these people being so present in our lives. But with Michelle Obama, it created this challenge. But I really do, you know, I'm so proud of the work that everybody did. And you know, I am so proud of so many moments of the series, and I hope people watch it, you know, knowing that, like, yeah, just people were being ridiculous on Twitter. But yeah, some of the episodes I watched and I was so blown away by the performances, not just in the Michelle Obama storyline with, you know, O.T. Fagbenle, who played Barack, and, you know, the wonderful actresses that played Malia and Sasha Obama, like, they crushed it in their own way. But also Michelle Pfeiffer is incredible Betty Ford. If she doesn't win all of the awards for her portrayal, like, it's extraordinary. And you know, Gillian Anderson was incredible as well. So,
yep.
I hope people see it.
I've seen it. I recommend it. You know, also, we don't know that much about a lot of the first ladies. You know, we always find out about the presidents, all the dirt, all the good things, all the bad things, all the policies. But there's always a first lady, too. And, like,
sure,
I understand they're not the president, but they still always have, like, they have to live with the president all the time. They have their own things that their policies they're trying to enact, or things that they want to get done, or their own ways of thinking about things. And I think it's worth exploring, and it's very interesting as this show sees. You know, I could listen to stories about all the first ladies.
Yeah, and also I will mention that my favorite episode of the season was actually it was this flashback episode of all of the three first ladies meeting their future husbands.
Yeah,
but really it was, like, about who they were before they even met these guys.
Yeah.
And the actors, the actresses that played those women, they were all just so amazing and, you know, brought such humanity to just the upbringing of these women. And I mean, Jamie Lawson was, She just crushed it. Julian De Niro, who is Robert De Niro's son, played young Brock. And he was just, his energy, like, he brought this just really incredibly, like nerdy swag to Brock that I thought was appropriate, because that's Brock.
Yeah, that's kind of nerdy swag. I mean, I never heard it said that way, but that totally resonates with me. Yeah.
That is Brock.
Yeah.
It was a wild project. Like, to do something like where you're going between storylines like that and not, you know, it was a very ambitious project.
Well, very cool.
Check it out.
Look, you work on a lot of projects with a lot of other people, but you also had your own project, your short that came out called Coney 2022. Let's talk about this. Now, this is reference to Joseph Coney, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Joseph Coney of Coney 2012.
Yeah.
The famous.
Right. God, was that really Coney 2012? That's 10 years ago?
10 years later. That's why I did it.
Wow.
It's been 10 years.
And we knew each other then, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we did a really silly video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really funny. It was a funny video.
Thank you.
Was that the inspiration, the 10-year mark? And you know, explain a little bit, like, what this whole thing is, if people don't remember or don't know.
Yeah,
know?
So Coney 2012 was, like, this moment that happened in 2012 where basically this video went viral of this, like, white Christian guy who went to Uganda and found out that there was, like, this terrible warlord named Joseph Coney that was kidnapping children and turning them into child soldiers and committing atrocities, like, truly an awful person. This guy, you know, he made this documentary based on footage of when he went to Uganda, and it was, like, the first, like, huge, huge viral video that had, like, the most views on YouTube, like, ever at that moment. It was, like, over 50 million views. And the way that this guy was portrayed, it was very arch. It was very, like, sort of simplistic in the way that, like, I knew Uganda to be, and the people that are actually, like, you know, have family from there. Both of my parents were born and raised in Uganda.
Yeah.
I have been there several times. I knew about Joseph Kony 10 years before, like, in 2002.
So this,
like,
is a guy that had been around for a long time.
He'd been around for a long time, and he was an issue. But by the time Kony 2012 was trending and it was, like, a thing, Joseph Kony wasn't even in Uganda. Like, he had, like, fled. And so to me, it was, like, the way that he was portrayed as this, like, cannibalistic, like, super predator, like, it was just so, like, it leaned into the tropes of, like, Africans in a way where, yeah, ultimately it was about saving kids and, you know, sort of getting rid of this guy and, you know, charity, but the way, like, the ideas and sort of, like, imagery that it leaned on, it was, like, very deeply problematic. And so it always just made me laugh, because people here were like, oh my God, I've never heard of this guy. We got to do something about it. And it was, like, this example of, like, people just really getting very passionate about a thing and then forgetting about it immediately.
Yep.
And so, and that's what happened with Coney 2012, like, where people, if I mention it, people forgot about it. But as soon as you see the poster with, like, that donkey and the elephant and, like, make Coney famous, everyone sort of remembers it again. And so I just thought, we made that video in 2012 just because I thought it was funny. I was like, they're treating this guy like a supervillain. The way that it fizzled out, if you remember, is that there was all this hoopla and, like, this guy, he was getting press and they're raising all this money. And then the skepticism came out where they found out that this guy was using, like, a very small fraction of what he raised to actually sort of go towards the cause.
Right.
And it was sort of shady. And all this media scrutiny of, like, making Coney famous sort of revealed the fact that, like, this guy was sort of making himself famous in a way. And he was like an aspiring filmmaker. And he had this sort of, like, psychotic episode where he was pacing the streets of San Diego naked. And
I remember that now.
And
yes.
Allegedly, like, there was a witness that thought that he was masturbating in public. And so there was a TMZ video that, like, went viral. And he was like, oh, I wasn't, you know, masturbating, but I definitely had a psychotic episode and I definitely was naked. And so it really discredited the entire movement.
Yeah.
And, you know, it became this joke and then everyone forgot about it. So, you know, since in the year since, I've been doing this character, this Joseph Kony character, where, like, if I do, like, I'll do a character bit where, like, I'll rap as Joseph Kony, or I'll, like, do stand up as Joseph Kony in this way of, like, I was super famous and then everyone forgot about me.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make a comeback. in Hollywood. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, fast forward to like 2021, there was a show where I was going to do with my Dopetown 3000 guy, Greg Smith, and there was a miscommunication where we couldn't do the show. And I was like booked, didn't have my partner to do this show. And I was like, what am I going to do? Oh, well, I'll do Joseph Kony doing stand-up. And I was like, what is the angle now? I haven't been doing this character for so long. Oh my God, it's been almost 10 years since Kony 2012. Why don't I do it in like this retrospect thing of like Netflix is doing a docuseries on Joseph Kony 10 years later. What is he doing now?
Right.
He's trying to make a comeback. 10 years later, this is his huge comeback. Kony 2022, 10 years later. And so I did this stand-up set where I brought cameras and I was like, oh, you know, I'm here. Netflix is doing a documentary about me. Don't mind the cameras. Hashtag strong black lead. and then I was like, wait, why don't I make this into like a mockumentary?
Yeah.
And so I ended up doing another set and like taking all that footage. And it was basically like, it's sort of a mockumentary of like Joseph Kony being like, I'm trying to come back into the zeitgeist. I was famous. I want to come back. But it's also like sort of this satire of how people get super passionate over the thing and then forget about it.
Right.
And there's definitely like, he mentions Black Lives Matter of like, yeah, you know, and white people start feeling guilty about the thing and then they forget about it and, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. Like that kind of stuff. And it's like Joseph Kony's perspective of like what is happening now in 2022.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, can we watch this? Where can we watch this? I've seen it, but where can people watch it?
Sure. It is on YouTube. I've just thrown it out there free because that's how original Kony 2012 was. And so it's out there and watch it. It's very silly.
Nice.
But it's definitely like the darkest sort of thing that I've done in terms of like a satire. It's pretty dark.
I'm into it. I'm into it. You guys should all be into it.
Yeah.
Another show that I really enjoy. I love that for you.
Yeah.
I love that for you that you're working on. I love that.
Yeah,
for you.
I love
Does that
make
sense?
I love that for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a fan of so many people on this show.
Sure.
I mean, well, how'd you get involved with this one?
It was, you know, a show that came out of nowhere, really. I mean, my agent submitted me for it and I interviewed and, you know, they hired me as a writer and it was a really incredible experience.
Wait, so you interviewed for a job and then you got it?
Yeah.
Wow, fascinating.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's interesting.
it still happens. It still happens, you know?
Yeah, we're so used to people having these like crazy stories about us. So anyway, I was...
Yeah, so like my friend that I hadn't seen forever, I was on a...
I was at Joshua Tree.
Yeah, I was at Joshua Tree and they were on mushrooms, you know? And he's like, oh my God, I got to hire you for this job. No, this was like so... Just like an ordinary thing of like my agent submitted my sample script. And they read it and they were like, let's interview this guy. And I interviewed and then they hired me.
I mean, when I see the premise for the show, it's immediately just like, I would totally watch the show. You know, we're talking about people that work at like the home shopping type network or QVC, right? And what goes on behind the scenes and the different hosts and things like that.
Yeah.
And you got Molly Shannon and...
Well, first of all, it was created by Vanessa Bayer.
Vanessa Bayer, yes. Oh, my
Jeremy,
God.
And Jeremy Beiler.
I can't believe I blanked on Vanessa Bayer. She's brilliant. Don Lazarus, the kid, the bar mitzvah kid on SNL. All these. She's so great.
She's
Vanessa Bayer.
She's the best. She's the best and so funny and such a wonderful human being. And it's so just based on her childhood. I mean, she had leukemia as a child, but it's this character that's loosely based on her.
Yeah.
It all takes place in the world of a network that is very much inspired by QVC.
Yeah.
It's called SVN. On the show. And it's about a girl that lies about having cancer, as an adult. Yeah. And it has this incredible cast and it's very much the silly, you know, kind of dark, goofy, smart sensibility of both Vanessa Bayer and Jeremy Beiler, who was her co-creator and also collaborated a lot on SNL. Jeremy Beiler was a writer on there and is so funny. And so smart. And so, they made this show. The writer's room was so funny. Everyone was just killers. Jesse Klein, the showrunner, executive producer, everyone was like incredible and so kind. The cast, Jennifer Lewis.
Yes.
Iconic. I mean, I can go on and on about that. Matt Rogers, you know, Aiden Maieri, Paul James, Jonna Wilson.
Like I said, the cast is just...
Yeah, Poonam Patel. Like, everyone, like just killers. So in my episode, Tyra Banks got to play like a cameo role in it.
Right.
And she was...
Wait, Tyra Banks from Higher Learning?
From Higher Learning.
Nice.
Tyra Banks from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, was she on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Yeah,
oh,
was.
Nice.
Also, Tyra Banks from Love and Basketball.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. She's acted a lot.
No, she has. I always think it's funny to mention like the thing that they did the longest ago.
Of course.
And then you mentioned something that was before that, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah. Yeah, in the same way that, you know... Yeah, if I ever met Ryan Gosling, I'd be like, oh, man, remember the Titans?
Yes.
Put Petey in. He's better than me. He's better.
That's right. That's such an iconic line in the movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's better. Put Pete in. Anyway, yeah, so Tyra Banks is so funny. I think the biggest surprise to me, like, in that show, I mean, everyone was like, killer, but how good of an improviser Tyra Banks is. I can't take credit for like most of the things that she said in that scene because she was like improvising a lot.
Really?
And it was all hilarious. And we were all just like in Video Village cracking up, but also like looking at each other like, oh my God, like why doesn't Tyra Banks do more comedy?
Yeah.
It's insane. She's so funny.
Well, look, you're working on so many cool projects right now, and I couldn't be happier for that. And they're all like, they're all things that if I haven't watched them, I'll watch them and be like, I should have been watching this, you know?
Sure.
There hasn't been any... I mean, look, there's going to be, because you work on so many things now. There's going to be a clunker, and then I'm going to put you on blast.
Oh, you're going to put me on
the
blast.
Social medias.
Yeah, yeah. Just come after me. You're going to be leading the Black Twitter charge.
I don't know if I'm allowed to do that.
I don't know. Filipino Twitter? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe there's a PI Twitter, you know?
Yeah,
I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe, yeah.
Wherever it is, I'll be leading the charge.
Yeah, just be like, Zora Beacon Gaga, we're going in.
Yeah. Hashtag taking down Beacon Gaga.
Yeah. I'll live for that. If the moment when I'm trending on Twitter, just... people trying to go after me is a moment where I'm like, oh, this is...
And then when it's people that you knew in the past that are doing
it,
then you know you've really made it.
I live for that. Can't wait. I can't wait for it. I welcome it.
Well, hey, before we get out of here, I need to get three quick recommendations from Zora Beacon Gaga.
Okay. Station 11. Incredibly beautiful show about how just impactful art is.
Yeah.
In healing from trauma. It's about a pandemic, but it was written before our pandemic. It's incredible.
It is great. The acting is just like
stunning
on that show.
The directing, everything.
It's all great.
It's all great. Top Gun, Maverick. It's so good.
Here's what's funny. The very last show, one of the recommendations at the end was original Top Gun. So it's all Top Gun right now.
And Top Gun, baby.
I had to shamedly tell her that I've never seen Top Gun. I've seen Top Gun Maverick, though.
I mean, it's better. It's better than the original one. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, fighting words. Listen, all right. Here we go.
No shade like to the original Top Gun. It's so fun, but it's like a Kenny Loggins music video.
Yeah.
Like it's just vibes, you know? But this.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. It's a great soundtrack, but this movie takes a lot of what happened in the first movie and they like make a story out of it.
Yeah.
And it's a really wonderful story.
I was happy to see Ian Gary in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. He was. Yeah. I think.
He was in like the two scenes at the beginning before Cruise moves to the other place.
Yeah, yeah, when he's like in breaking the rules.
I was like, I know that guy in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, like I mean Val Kilmer was really incredible in it. My dear friend Monica Barbaro played Phoenix.
Okay.
She crushed it. She was great. Yeah. And but yeah, like the whole cast, I mean, Tom Cruise, come on.
He's the epitome of movie star now, isn't he?
I mean, when I was watching it at the Alamo Drafthouse, and, you know, they have all those, like, shots of everyone, like, in the credits, and then it got to Tom Cruise at the end, and we all clapped.
Yeah.
Because we're just like, thanks, man. Like, you really waited on this movie, because I knew that movie, it was supposed to come out in 2020, and they sat on it, and he was like, I want people to watch this in the movie theater. He's such a proponent of movies being on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I really, I'm glad that he really stuck to his Top Guns, made sure that we watched it on the big screen and we're happy. Like, you know, it was just such a wonderful moment in the movie theater.
One of my friends is such a big fan of the original Top Gun that he rented out a theater for his friends for his birthday to go watch Top Gun Maverick. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was very, very fun. It's over $1 billion.
Love it. I love it. I love the win. I love the win for everyone.
You got one more recommendation for us?
Yeah. I really enjoyed Last Chance U Basketball.
Oh, so good.
It's so good.
I like all of the Last Chance U's, but that one was different because it was the only basketball one.
It's the only basketball one.
Yeah.
It's so good. I watched Last Chance U just sort of for fun because it's, you know, like it's so intense. But yeah, the basketball one is incredible. And it also, like, it has a very surprising ending.
It does. That
it's very, very worthwhile.
I always, when I'm done too, I wait until the whole season's over and then I look to see where all of them are.
Yeah,
like,
did
this guy make it at USC?
Yeah.
Did this guy go to, like, Florida State?
Yeah.
You know, and, like, sometimes they did.
Sometimes they did. Sometimes there are happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
And that coach, he's not a perfect guy, but you don't hate him like the other coaches.
Yeah.
Like, where the other Last Chance U coach, like, the first, they're, like, disgusting people.
Yeah.
But this guy is, like, a complicated guy, but, like, you actually want to root for him.
Right. It's an interesting show. It's a docuseries,
mm-hmm.
I guess, but it's very interesting about people trying to get second chances and how they go about that,
mm-hmm.
how, you know, and the people that try to help them with their second chances. And it's just, you know, it is about sports, but not really. It's about life and choices we make, and
mm-hmm.
Also where we grew up and the family we're in, like, put us in situations that we're in sometimes. And can we get out of them, you know? So, yeah, well, thank you for those recommendations. Those are all great.
Of course.
Guys, if you'd like to get more Brentfest stuff, such as pictures of Zora, Beak, and Gaga and I enjoying our Brentfest from Phonuts, go to my website, brentpope.com. You listen to all the Brentfest episodes there. You can see clips from all my TV appearances in the official Brentfest store with a bunch of fun stuff. Shirts, mugs, stickers, Zora, Beak, and Gaga, Coney 2022, short film posters, $8.95, guys. Only three left.
Only three left, guys.
Only three left.
Just get them while they're there.
That's right. And these will not be coming back. There will not be a reprint of these, guys. So pick them up as you can.
Enter code. Make Coney famous.
Yeah. That's a long code, but guys, do you want it or do you not want it?
Do you want the discount?
Thank you. People of Earth, do yourself a favor by picking up something from the Brentfest store, brentfeststore.com. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Brentfest. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Brentfest is being enjoyed all over the United States and in 56 countries across the globe. The latest, Kenya.
Ooh.
Kenya. So welcome, Kenya. Let's have some mandazi. That's a food in Kenya.
Hey, semabana.
That's right. Nice. Is that good?
Twinde.
Nice. Do you know Kenyan food?
Jumbo.
Wow. Are those Kenyan foods?
Those aren't foods. I'm saying words.
In Kenyan?
Swahili.
Swahili.
They speak Swahili in
Look,
Kenya.
I didn't know. That's great.
Yeah.
This is the right person to have on the show right now in Kenya.
Semabana.
Man, look, our numbers are growing in Kenya as we speak. 5, 6, 7, 8, 10
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
Yes, there we go. Trust Me by Breakfast Burrito Brigade. We are just getting started. Special thanks to my studio engineer, Marco Leon. Leon me when you're not strong. That's all I got for you today, Mark. I'm really kind of low energy. Sorry. And everyone.
It started out so passionate.
I'll be your friend.
Okay, there it is.
I'll help you carry on. Move those sliders on the board. And we'll be your friends if you just call me and Zora.
Yeah.
And everyone at the fabulous Tiny Studio LA, tinystudioLA.com, for making me sound so good. Zora, Beak, and Gaga, what is next for you, and where can we find you on social media?
You can find me at Zora Beak and Gaga, ZoraBeakAnGaga, on all the social media. And yeah, just check out Coney 2022. Watch I Love That for You on Showtime. I make an appearance in episode 3.
Nice.
Hashtag Joanna Strong.
Ooh.
I have a cameo.
All righty.
Look out for me. Watch season 2 of Ghosts,
mm-hmm.
coming to CBS. You could also catch up on season 1 on Paramount Plus and Hulu. It's a fun show. First Lady is out there too. Check that out. I've gone over all these things.
Yep.
Check it out.
Look, in all seriousness, the new Woo Woo Brent wants to say, I love you like a brother.
Oh, thank you.
No one else I would have for the end of season 3. Keep killing it. I love what we're all doing. I love that for you. I love that for me. I love this for him. And, you know, I love everything.
I love you too,
right?
Brother.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
And with that, we put another Guess Who's Back? Back again. Coney's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back? We created a monster because nobody wants to quit Coney 2012 no more.
They want... oh, shit. Brett's got bars.
No, I don't.
Brett's got bars.
Yes, somebody said that about me. Marco, make sure that's encapsulated in time. I got bars.
Oh, man. This is so much rap happening in the studio,
right.
Including Brent Pope.
We put another Brent's Got Bars season finale episode with Zora, Beak, and Gaga, a Brentfest with Brent Pope in the old to-go bag. See ya.
Peace. Oh, shit.
That was ridiculous.
enjoy Breakfast with Brent Pope? Help support it by buying some awesome swag like the comfy shirts and the beautiful coffee mugs. Go to breakfaststore.com.